Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be talking about some of the developments in the energy sector, just around what's been happening in terms of the SA's emergency measures, just around that for the energy sector. And energy has been a big issue in the last couple of months. I think this week South Africans, you know, people around South Africa were experiencing load shedding, and that's just one of the symptoms of, you know, an energy sector that does need some type of transformation. And to sort of help us to get a sense just around what's going on and, you know, some of their proposals, we're joined by Berkeley Research Group's Dr. Peter Bird, who is a managing director in their Singapore office, and he focuses on expert testimony on economic and financial issues, including valuation and quantification of damages. Dr. Bird, greetings to you today from London.
Greetings to you, Mateo. Lovely to be with you.
I said London, but it's Surrey. Yeah, you said Surrey.
We're near to London, but not so near in the pandemic. I haven't been to London for 9 months.
Wow, I think, you know, that's probably symptomatic, or, you know, probably the story of a lot of people, just given everything that's going on right now. As a baseline, Berkeley Research Group, some insight just around what it is that you guys do for those that may not have heard of your firm.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Berkeley Research Group is an international consultancy. We're known as BRG. We're called Berkeley Research Group because we were founded out of the faculty at the University of Berkeley in California, and our head office is in the Bay Area of San Francisco. We're a global group. We have expertise in a variety of areas. One of our biggest practices, and the one I'm involved in, is our disputes economics and damages practice, which provides expert witness evidence in litigation and arbitration disputes in a wide variety of sectors. We also have a dedicated energy group, which provides services to the energy industry across the world, particularly in the oil and gas industry. And we're also currently advising on a government on a privatization of the energy industry in Asia. We have a corporate finance practice. We have a very strong healthcare practice. And we're an international group. As I say, we're headquartered in California, but we have offices in London, offices in Europe, offices in Asia, in Singapore and Hong Kong. And we have a small team on the ground in South Africa providing support to the local industry.
Now, when it comes to the energy sector and South Africa's emergency measures, as Berkeley Research Group, what's the interest in that particular sector?
Well, we have a general interest in supporting the energy industry across the world and supporting governments and industry players. I myself personally, although I have a family, a long-standing family link to South Africa, I have done energy work in South Africa back in the early 2000s, but I haven't been active in South Africa recently.
So perhaps then you could give us some insight then, because you aren't in South Africa, but you do have some sense of what's going on. So maybe in broad terms, you could, maybe give us just some quick thoughts around what's actually happening for those that might not be, you know, fully aware of these emergency measures. What's actually being proposed, and what do you make of it, you know, from your understanding?
Yeah. I mean, I think all your listeners were aware, South Africa has a major power supply problem, mainly due to the poor state of a lot of the generation infrastructure in South Africa. That most of that infrastructure is coal-based. So South Africa's particular problems are firstly an excessive dependence on fossil fuels and particularly coal, which is the most carbon intensive forms of electricity generation, and secondly, a shortage of electricity generating capacity. And as I understand it, the Powership program is the government's way of addressing immediately that shortage of generation capacity. The program is essentially to generate electricity from natural gas by bringing liquefied natural gas, that's natural gas methane, which has been liquefied and therefore can be bought on ships and is transportable, and also bringing power plants, which are mounted on barges, and then generating electricity on the waterfront and feeding it directly into the grid. The advantages of that are that it can be deployed very quickly and it can provide immediate capacity. It also provides a diversity of generation because obviously its gas is different from, is a different fossil, is a different fuel source from coal, and it is less carbon intensive. A gas power plant produces only 60% of the CO2 of a coal plant. Now, obviously, available capacity is one issue in South Africa. The other issue is obviously carbon emissions, and part of the global trend, everyone across the world now wants to reduce their carbon emissions. Gas is better than coal, but obviously it still generates carbon, and whereas compared with renewables, which are generally carbon free. So the two debates in South Africa, firstly, how to get immediate electricity generating capacity to keep the lights on, but secondly, the comparison of a fossil fuel based source like natural gas or LNG, as I call it, and a renewable source like solar and wind.
You know, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about, you know, like you said, the plan actually sounds like it could actually make sense, right? And I think at this point, South Africans would be, you know, willing to accept to try anything that keeps the lights on, you know, 24 hours a day and actually provides, you know, electricity at least constantly. And I think businesses, you know, would say anything that can mitigate that would be good. But has this actually worked in other parts of the world?
Yes, it has worked in other parts of the world, and it's particularly used in parts of Asia. I mean, there's two questions. One, is gas a good fuel for electricity generation? Yes, it's reliable, and it can be economically competitive, and it's less carbon emitting than coal is. And the being mounted on ships has two advantages. The first advantage is that the ships can be built quickly. The power plants can be built in factories, put on a barge, and then moved into position. So you don't have to worry about things like local planning. You don't have to worry about civil engineering. You simply manufacture the electricity turbines in a factory, put them on a ship, bring them in, and you can start generating immediately. So that's the big benefit. And the other benefit is, of course, they can be moved, that when the need for them has disappeared, then you can move them on to another site. So that speed, economics, because you can mass produce them, and mobility makes them very attractive in parts of Asia, particularly where they have a shortage of other generating fuels. So the model is well established and has been used both across the world, in Asia, also quite a lot in South America. The obvious question, though, is it economic compared with alternatives?
And I guess, you know, what it is, that natural question of, you know, how does that cost compare to what we have? Because in South Africa, as you highlighted earlier on, we have coal-fired power stations. I think some of South Africa's neighbors use hydro. I can think of, I think, Kabora Basa, Kariba, etc. Right. So how does it compare to that? And of late, people have really been going on about solar and, you know, all of that. So where are we on the spectrum when it comes to the economics?
Oh, very happy to talk about that. Look, I mean, the benefit of this solution is the speed with which it can be deployed. To build a hydropower plant will take you 10 years from today to when you get the first electricity from it. You have to You have to identify the site, you have to identify the social issues with, in most cases, having to move people. You then have to do a civil construction, you have to fill the dam up. Hydro is extremely attractive, it's extremely cheap, it's extremely environmental friendly if you put some of the social issues aside, but hydro will take a long time. The benefit of the powership solution is that you can deploy the capacity extremely, extremely quickly. And compared with coal, the benefit of the powership solution is, as I've already said, it's much less carbon emitting. But the other thing you need to compare it with is renewables. And obviously, South Africa has extensive renewable resources. Solar and wind. Typically, solar and wind is very land intensive, but South Africa also has a lot of land. We all know that South Africa has a lot of sun. So in that sense, obviously, South Africa is extremely well endowed. There's two problems with relying on solar energy and to some extent wind in meeting South Africa's needs. The first problem is that solar sites tend to be relatively small, which means you need quite a few separate power plants to come up with the 1300 or so megawatts that the power ships are providing. You need lots of small projects rather than one big project. And secondly, the way South Africa has procured solar to date is by running a series of procurement tenders. For various government reasons, this has been a fairly slow process. And if you're running a lot of processes, inevitably it's going to slow it down. So the speed with which you can deploy solar, there's question marks about that. But the other big issue with solar is that solar power is not reliable. I mean, to put it simply, when a cloud goes in front of the sun, the output drops, and therefore you do not get the steady 100% reliable source of power that you need. And obviously, particular industries have a particular need for what we call baseload power. Solar provides intermittent power; it does not provide baseload power. Now, that problem is not insoluble. The way you solve that is by storing the power. So you can generate power intermittently from solar. The level of output will go up and down depending on the intensity of the sun and the time of day. But if you've got a storage medium, then you can get around that, and you can convert that into a steady level flow of baseload reliable power. Storage can be done either through there's a number of solutions. One of the most popular solutions internationally is by building dams, using the power to drive water uphill. That provides a source of energy, and that's known as pump storage. So if you have a large geographical facility where you can move water between different heights, you can convert that into a very stable, very effective storage. But to do that, again, needs a lot of civil engineering. The other solution is to use batteries. We all know that in our cars, we charge our battery up and then it discharges. Batteries convert intermittent power into steady, reliable power. So in principle, solar plus batteries will provide a very stable, reliable alternative to the gas fires. The problem, though, is firstly, it can be slow to deploy because of the need to run so many different processes. But secondly, the batteries are quite land intensive, and also they can be very expensive. Now, battery technology is changing. As of today, in most places across the world, solar plus batteries is not competitive with natural gas-fired electricity. However, that can change, and over a longer period, everyone expects that the cost of batteries will come down. and therefore the cost of solar plus batteries as a source of reliable power will come down, and therefore solar and renewables will become more competitive. But for the time being, if you want steady, reliable baseload power, then in most places in the world, gas-fired generation is going to be a more economic solution of long-term stable power.
Doctor, I was actually just going to chime in and ask a quick follow-up because, you know, from everything that you're saying, it really does make one think, broadly speaking, around the world, why we seem to have not figured out this issue of storage. Because to use the analogy that a lot of people often have, the little hamster on a wheel and it generating electricity, it seems, you know, in many parts of the world, that's literally where we are, where you constantly need to be generating this thing in real time to be using it, you know, for the most part. I just wonder why we haven't found, like, you know, some type of a long-term solution, because we can store other forms of energy. I'm thinking of oil. We can have oil reserves, etc. But, you know, you don't really hear of a country's electricity reserves and stuff like that. So it's just one of those things, from my end.
It's actually a very good question. I'll tell you what the answer is. The answer is, because up until now, we have had very substantial supplies of fossil fuels. And with fossil fuels, you can generate electricity that doesn't need storage. So up until now, we haven't actually needed much storage. And therefore, not much money has gone into developing electricity storage. Only in the last 10 years, when we faced the climate crisis and the carbon crisis, do we recognize that we need to replace fossil electricity by renewable electricity. And renewable electricity, for the most part, is intermittent, and therefore we need storage. So we've only really needed storage on a massive scale. We've only identified that need over the last 10 years, which is why the industry is still relatively young, relatively undeveloped. Obviously, all energy experts would expect that this is going to change substantially over the next 20 years. And even the mobile phone industry has driven battery technology. We now have sort of batteries in our mobile phones that, even compared with 10 years ago, there have been massive improvements. These improvements, everyone hopes they will continue, and storage will become cheaper, and that will make solar more competitive.
And the other piece, I guess, when it comes to all of this, because it really does seem as if, just coming back to the power ships, right? I think you said the flexibility that comes, especially with, firstly, how quickly they can actually be deployed, but secondly, the mobility factor. There was a point of clarity I wanted to get from you. These ships, do they primarily work, you know, along coasts, or do you find some of them also coming in inland, like?
Predominantly, they work along coast, but there is actually no reason why they should not come inland. And I'm aware, for example, that it's not something that I'm acutely familiar with, but I know that in some African countries there has been talk about deploying barge power several hundred miles inland using the river system. So they need not be on the They need not be on the coast. What I should also say is that it's not just the power plant that can be on barges. You also have the gas storage on ships as well. There are things called FSRUs, floating storage and regasification units. Whereas, 20 years ago, when we built gas-fired power stations with LNG, we had to build a big gas terminal on land. Nowadays, we don't have to do that. We can simply just take a gas transport ship and convert it into a storage unit and deploy it again. We can build them in factories. We can build the ships in factories and deploy them very quickly.
And the The other piece, when it comes to all of this, because South Africa, we spoke about load shedding at the beginning of the conversation, and it's really become quite an endemic issue. But apart from maintenance and power stations breaking down all the time, our inability to store coal in a dry place, and all of these things, there's just also the issue of being able to pay. For these things, because at the end of the day, someone has to foot the bill for the ships. Someone has to foot the bill for keeping the ships going, running, maintenance, all of that. But if there's issues in terms of, corruption, that's a big thing that's happening at the moment. And also municipalities and, other authorities not paying over money. I can imagine that this would be one of those ideas that, sounds really great on paper, but implementing it, might be a bit of an issue. Maybe you could talk to us around how other geographies that you mentioned earlier on, Singapore, South America, have been able to effectively do, this thing.
Yeah, well, I think there's not much I think I'd be comfortable talking about, because obviously, South Africa has big problems in terms of the way municipalities are run, the way electricity bills are collected, corruption, throughout society. They are big problems. I think South Africa has to address those problems, and the solutions to those problems are going to come from inside South Africa, not from outside. Obviously, if I compare somewhere like Singapore, does not have the corruption problems that South Africa and other countries have. And without those problems, life is much easier. I mean, there's no doubt a lot of South Africa's power problems are the result of social and political problems rather than economic problems. But I don't think you need me to talk about those issues.
And then going forward, when it comes to, if someone was to say that they want to, put something like this, I think that's the one thing we hadn't really spoken about. Are there any measures, like what would it actually cost if someone said, okay, cool, I've heard Dr. Bird, this thing sounds like it's a good thing. We're a consortium. We can put money together. How many billions are we talking about?
Well, just to give you a rough idea, a gas-fired power plant, a 1,000 megawatt plant, will cost about a billion US dollars. So these are obviously all these are large numbers, and that's why they typically have to be procured on a national basis. If you're talking about relatively small investors, there's plenty of opportunities in the energy sector in South Africa, but they are predominantly in the renewable sector in terms of small-scale solar, small-scale wind projects. As I said, for quick, immediately available, large amounts of baseload power, the power ships are an obvious solution. But in the long run, the real opportunity for investors will be in the solar sector when building small solar and wind power plants. And over time, that will, that will strengthen the whole system in South Africa.
All right. So as we end off, Prof, your outlook just in terms of, where the energy sector is going, because, I think one of the things that is quite clear is that it also depends, one, on the environment, the social issues, etc. But just some of the key energy trends that you're seeing, I think we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the energy ships, and then we also spoke a lot about storage. I think we also spoke about solar. Anything else that you're keeping an eye on?
No, I think the exciting thing, really, I'll get back to it, is solar. I mean, the South African solar program, as I say, it'd be nice if it could grow faster, but it's certainly an exciting program, and you're coming up with very low prices for solar. And there's absolutely no doubt that solar is the future for South Africa.
All right. So that's been us. We're talking to Dr. Peter Bird, who is from Berkeley Research Group, giving us some insight into what's going on, some of the emergency measures that are being proposed in South Africa to help with the energy crisis. He was talking about what are called mobile power stations, otherwise known as power ships, just how you can put those together. They work by you create floating power station in the least, working primarily along coasts, but he does say that it is able to do something like that inland, and just talking about the fact that it's worked out pretty well in other parts of the world. Also just highlighting the fact that compared to a coal-fired power station, for example, or other types of power stations like a hydro plant, this would be up and running in a much shorter amount of time and at a much lower cost, but it all then depends on the actual implementation on the ground. So that's been it. Dr. Bird, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure. And I hope everything works out well for you all.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
If you're a person who is experiencing intermittent power in South Africa, then this is one of those issues that's all-encompassing, because it affects households and it's affecting businesses. In households, if you are unlucky to have a power surge after a bout of load shedding, you might find yourself having to unnecessarily replace household appliances, TVs, refrigerators, etc., coming out of your own pocket. At the same time, if you're a business with expensive machinery that would preferably have to be run 24 hours a day, that's damage that you might have to take on. But at the same time, just the planning around, what happens. We are working in an increasingly digitalized world, right? And when you don't have constant power, that does become an issue. So fixing the power generation, this energy issue, is very important for a country like South Africa, but countries around, and especially on this continent, we really do need to figure out the power generation issue. And this sounds like it could be quite a feasible solution, and especially coming in at lower cost and having that mobility to go and support, let's say, areas where a normal power station, whether coal or hydro, has failed. You go there and then you use that as backup, some stuff like that. So it does sound like it could be a viable solution, but the issue then becomes implementation, because lots of people are coming up with these solutions. I remember we had a previous guest who spoke about using artificial intelligence and machine learning as a way to see where faults are, to be able to predict where maintenance is needed, to be able to just see what type of repairs need to be done before breakdowns happen, to increase efficiencies, how many people are needed, how many people not needed, where do we need more people? All of these things from a resourcing point of view when it comes to power stations, for example. There's the rise of solar, which has been coming down in cost and becoming more and more popular as load shedding has continued to be an issue. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of solutions. But once again, the issue then becomes implementation. And at the same time, there needs to be an addressing of actually paying for all of these things, because we can say that we're going to come up with these power ships, we're going to build them, but if we aren't paying, if there isn't that pipeline of funds going from households to collection agencies, municipalities, over to the power utilities, then it becomes a broken system, and you take away the incentives to actually improve what's going on. So once again, we just hope that those that can will take this one up and start implementing that. But at the same time, knowing full well that there are those inherent risks and finding ways to mitigate, but more importantly, finding ways that the country can get behind a unified energy plan and actually implement it so that the economy can grow. Because at the end of the day, this will end up putting more money into everyone's pockets as opposed to taking it out. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.